Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I'm using transparency because majorly because the formulas I want to demonstrate. So so talk is on mirror symmetry, but we call it mirror principle. It's not the principle, it's mirror. It's the principle that comes from mirror symmetry. So what we are going to do is to look at it as a mathematical question. And we are trying to solve an enumerative problem. And the whole mechanism should be able to solve some problem more general than the one in mirror symmetry. That's what why we call it mirror principle. So the classical problem in algebraic geometry go all the way back to the old days, 100 years ago, Schubert and all the Italian geometers. So it's counting curves of some fixed genus and a fixed degree in a given algebraic manifold. Of course, we don't care what the algebraic manifold is in general. We would like to count them all. And so far, the major advance is on final manifolds, C1 positive, and Calabi-Yau manifold where C1 equals 0. The argument that we're going to do seems to indicate there's possibility to deal with general type also. But it seems to be more transcendental there somehow. So for example, of course, the famous theorem that dates back to 100 years old is 27 lines on a cubic surface. So these lines are degree equal to 1, of course. In this talk, I will restrict ourselves to genus here only. And also, as a matter of fact, we will restrict to one single manifold, namely the quintet. And basically, the technique there is enough to give the basic understanding of what's going to go on. It takes, on the other hand, non-trivial effort to generalize it more, to more general case. So what we are, the technique we are going to develop actually works for general final manifold or Calabi-Yau manifold, which can be embedded in the product of CPNs, so that the generator of the projective space give rise to the Taylor cone for M. So so we don't need the toric variety in general. That is a general statement which I won't. What the answer is complicated, so I won't tell you how to do it. So now, whereas, you know, so we shall focus on quintet. And well, first of all, we should know there's this famous conjecture of Clemens, which he make it publicly in Berkeley Congress in 1986. And he conjectured for a generic quintet for a degree 5 polynomial in CP4 by a generic perturbation. There's only a finite number of resonant curves for each degree I. So this number is called Ni from now on. And this is still an open problem, that for a generic quintet, there's only finite number of rational curves. It's non-trivial to prove. I think it's probably proved up to degree 9 or something like that. That is true. Well, if it's finite, then it makes sense, very good sense to tell you what the number is. And so later on, we need to struggle to define what that means. So this is degree 1 is this. And this number, which we all know, Sheldon Chess DJ for degree 2. And then the Norwegians DJ for degree 3, which of course we know the story that Candelas and whole group has given this number first. And Of course, the proof is not the same proof as what they give. And, but that's the first, I guess, the first indication that mean the symmetry is right. That mathematician did wrong first. Anyway, so now let's come to the major part of the talk. So we're going to define what Ni is. So let XD, this is the only terminology I use for this XD, later I change the terminology. Say the stable mass of degree D of genus here, curves mapping to CP4. Well, this is a compactification or space of maps from genus CO curve from P1 to CP4. And one needs to compactify it to make good sense of it. I'll discuss a little bit what stable maps means slightly later. And this compactification nowadays was attributed to Concevich, but actually goes all the way back. In the old days, on minimum surface, where I'm very much involved, it's actually dates back to Sachs-Wuhlenberg. And then Gromov take over the idea from Sachs-Wuhlenberg, and sometimes it's called Gromov compactification. And then from then, there are Parker, Wolfson, and then Ron Tan, and all many other people who contribute to this. And Concevich was the first one, I guess, to write it in an algebraic way. So once you have the compactification, you define vector bundle over this manifold, the stable curve. So each point XD is a map from genus CO curve to CP4. It could be a bunch of them, but nevertheless you get a map. And so the element is called phi. It's a map from C to CP4. Here we have a Lie bundle, Harvard plane bundle to the power 5. That corresponds to a quintic. So I pull back that Lie bundle and look at it as a Lie bundle over C and take the sessions. And that's a fiber of my bundle over XD. And so this is the bundle that carries the information of counting the rational curves. And by definition, we define this number to be the Euler number of the bundle. The reason one is interested in this number is because if you have a quintic is a polynomial, degree 5 polynomial. So naturally, it's a session given by session of O5. A session of O5 gives rise to a session of this bundle, this bundle. Because it gives a session of O5, you pull back, you give a session of this bundle. So so the quintic gives rise to a session, and the seal of this session are just the rational curves of the quintet. So that's, and the Euler class counts the number of seals in principle. So that gives rise to the intuitive idea that this should be the number of seals. I mean number of rational curves. Well, in fact, this is not quite an Ni. It was observed by Philip Kenders and his group, and then justified rigorously by several group of people, Espinel, Morrison, and Concevich, that it should be written in this form, Kd equal to the sum, where Ni is what we call a number of rational curves of degree I. D over K is has to be integer, otherwise this number is considered to be zero. So This formula actually, well, we also justify this formula law too. So the interesting is to compute this number. Now this number actually, about 4 or 5 years ago, people were studying it from different point of view. Here everything is algebraic geometry, no symplectic geometry. And in symplectic geometry, where you have a symplectic form, so a symplectic form, and you want a almost complex structure which is compatible with omega, and you calculate those almost holomorphic curves. I guess Gromov call it pseudo holomorphic curve. And you observe, that's the work of Ron and later by Ron and Tan. You can define the a symplectic invariant Ni called bar in terms of the counting of this almost holomorphic curve. And this counting in a way is easier because then do not need to deal with continuous family. Generically, there are only finite number of such family, such curves, and they are the numbers of them, basically. So this number is naturally integer. And it's a very remarkable theorem that recently that Jun Li and Tan proved that Ni is equal to Ni bar. So the number of rational curves counted in terms of algebraic projective geometry is actually equal to this. But this has a possible to have sign change because of the orientation. So Ni could be negative, and this is unavoidable because sometimes in the actual calculation, Ni could comes out of a negative number, and that's because there's continuous family. Ni could be a negative number. The projective invariant, this Ni, could be a negative number. Because in general, you could have continuous family even for generic hybrid surface. Not for quintic, for generic Calabi-Yau manifold, you could have a continuous family of rational curves. You cannot perturb it away to make it finite.
But how
is it
defined?
Huh? You just define in terms of order class, so it could be negative number. There's no contradiction. But well, in the case of a conjecture, Clemens conjecture is true, that for generic complex structure, there are only finite number of rational curves, then it's an honest goodness number. But in general, there's a continuous family, and then you're counting the Euler class. And more importantly, the modulized space is only orbit one. And the number is in fact is a rational number. FRI is only a rational number. So it's a remarkable fact, it's always an integer because of this field. Because for generic almost complex structure, look at it as a symplectic invariant. They are integers. Because there you count almost holomorphic curves, they're integers. Because the number is finite there. Right? So this integer is a remarkable fact because the calculation that many people did starting from Friedrich Candelas, at power I, there's no reason they're integers. As a matter of fact, even for the case of quintic where Friedrich did it 7 years ago, there's no proof that these are integers. In fact, there's no proof up to now except here that those are integers. Because you take the ratio of two hybrid geometric series and you invert it and you plug that in and it's a mess. And the best you can say is a rational number. It's clear it's a rational number, but it's not clear that they are integers. So there are actually two steps. One step is to observe this are equal, and the second step is to observe this Ni is the same Ni that was calculated by Candelas. There are two definitions. This is the one that we just discussed here, defined this way. And now you have to prove that this Ni is the same Ni It's the one that you calculate using the period of integral. Okay? Yeah.
Are k's
integrals? Yes. Oh, no, no, k's are not integrals. No.
That's because
not. The line of aspects, they're orbifolds in general. So they're random numbers only. But ni is integer, it's remarkable. In fact, it's more remarkable when you know that the calculation in high dimensional moduli space, instead of one moduli, in the case of quintic, it's only one moduli. And it's more explicit. Multi-moduli space, you get multi-index here, they are still integers. So that's a remarkable theorem. This is a non-trivial theorem, very deep theorem to prove. Okay. Now, so let's recall, because we need that later. In the case of quintic, so everything is a quintic now. So the formula that we're trying to prove is this formula. That's given by Philip Candelas. We form the p-potential, which is this this series. This is a classical coupling from the Fred. This quintic, the degree 5 comes from. The 5 comes from the Fred is a quintic. 6 is just 3 factorial. And T cube is a classical. And this is the the quantum coalescence, so to speak. So this is the p-potential where the third differentiation. Oh. So well, so this is the quantum coalescence, so to speak. And this is the classical part. So this counts the rational curves, the capital F. And you go to the Miller manifold psi, which is given by this ODE, which calculate the period of the integral, the period of the free form, holomorphic free form. And we get this hypergeometric series, where x is a formal variable, capital H. Later on, capital H will be replaced by cohomology class, the hyperplane class. Here is a formal variable, you look at it as. And you differentiate this psi with respect to H formally, and set H equals 0. This is called Frobenius method in ODE. You form a set of four solutions. So they form a base of this equation, LF equals 0. So this gives rise a canonically defined base, F0, F1, F2, F3. And the we change the variable, the capital T to be F1 over F0. And so this is a different variable now. And we form another F, which is defined by this. Then the Miller conjecture, as written by Candelas, is this formula. So therefore, that's a transformation, because this is a T variable. The T variable, small t variable, the capital T variable, is a Miller transformation. Usually you see it's a T, it's Miller map. So we can invert this formula and get the calculation of the all these NIs, all the KIs. So here it's written, it's called a Miller transformation. The Miller transformation is very interesting mathematically. They behave beautifully, but we don't know any physics meaning of it. And so I will not talk too much about that transformation for today. So the goal is to prove this formula. that Freedom wrote down. And so before I go on, so first of all, let's just remind you, because I need to use this often. So we talk about stable maps. So stable map is a curve. It's a bunch of curves connect together. So normal crossing projective curve, and xi's are distinct smooth points on sigma. And the map is a continuous holomorphic map, and restrict each sigma I, each component, to becomes a smooth map extendable to the normalization sigma I, and satisfy this condition that the number has to be bigger than equal to 3. So if the image of sigma I is trivial, so that's a stable map, and this is a right compactification that one uses to deal with space of rational maps. So one needs to do the compactification right in order to be able to S sigma is a singular set of sigma. Singular points of sigma. Sigma may be singular. Okay, so basically the idea was using a tierboard localization formula, which goes back to already to the calculation in Ellingswood and Strom, and later used by Conservich extensively and Giffenthal extensively. So basically, we are dealing with calculated Euler class, as you know. And we want to localize it to some fixed points in order to be able to do the calculation. So we use this formula extensively. So see how you localize information to some fixed point. So this is the formula that we use, and I don't want to go in detail about how it works. I guess Bob is here. You can always ask him to give a lecture. So now, so we study stable maps, the modular space stable maps. This will be the terminology we use in general. So these are genus G and number of marked points K, and beta is a fixed cohomology class. And so the maps are in representing beta, and the target space is M. And but of course, we have always torus axon acting on the PM. And once you have an axon on the complex projective space, it induces a map, induces axon on the maps into PM, naturally. So so we are therefore studying the torus axon on the modular space. And we look at those fixed points, and they are not hard to calculate. One is a smooth fixed point, so a degree D cover of a invariant curve, P1, joining two fixed points, Pi, Pj, in the complex projective space. And the torus axon, of course, are fixed several points, n plus 1 points in Pn. So basically, the torus axon act on Cn plus 1. By multiplication, each of them gives rise to a weight, and the fixed points, they are n plus one of them actually. Yeah, this is a fixed point. You fix the fixed point of the torus. Pi are the fixed point of the torus. We take the equivalence resistance always a modular space. So it's a map over here. Yeah. There are singular fixed points which are obtained by breaking it into two different places. And this is important. The way that the modular split out into sub-modular space. And So this is a singular fixed point. Two curves drawn along a fixed point of the torus axis. So there are two types of fixed points. And now, given a so we get a modular space into Pn, and the way that we go is that we will study equivalent vector bundles over Pn, independent of the quintet or anything. So we take any vector bundles over Pn, we can develop a theory about it. So we take the T is the action, the torus action, the equivalent oil class. Now, turns out oil class is not the most important part, but it's relevant to the content that appears in Wheeler symmetry. You don't have to take oil class. There are a lot of interesting questions, mathematically speaking, what it counts. So in general, we take a multiplicative equivalent characteristic class. So, for example, Euler class is one of them, but you can take total Chern class. The total Chern class also satisfies the multiplicative property. So basically, what you need is a direct sum of two bundles. You take the characteristic class of it is equal to product, like the Whitney formula. So direct sum gives rise to a product. That's all we need. So Euler class is one of them, and total Chern class is another one. The total Chern class is actually quite interesting because the Euler class create problems because the the dimension may not be right when you integrate the modular space, may not give you the right number except in the case of Calabi-Yau and all that. But total Chern class is quite interesting because the total Chern class has a degree in each even dimension, so you always get something. And the question is how to interpret those things in the right way. And of course, these are not the only ones. Given any multiplicative equivalent characteristic class, you get something. Anyway, we call this vector bundle convex, just our terminology. If this is true, H1 of such a thing is 0. We call it concave if this is true. And this, at the end, actually, we take the convex bundle plus a concave bundle. Concave means H0. This is H0 is equal to 0. Okay? So at the end, we take a convex plus concave bundle. And if the dimension is right, we call it critical, actually. But anyway, it's not important at this moment for the discussion. Given a bundle, it induces a bundle, as I said, over here. You just pull back. And there's obstruction bundle. The session is a map, you see. You can induce it on here. It's a session space, it's this one. So you pull back the bundle from Pn. You take the sessions of the bundle over here, and that gives you the fiber. Now, there's a excess sequence coming in this way. And this is an important excess sequence, and this is kind of like Gouin formula. And because of that, we get this Gouin formula. Okay. So that's because we have a multiplicative law for the characteristic class. The product equal to the product here. So that's the formula. That's plays a fundamental rule. We have UD in general. It is the obstruction bundle. Obstruction bundle. But now the modular space.
It's
here. There's a corresponding thing for H1. In the case of convex bundle, we call it. Yeah. Okay? So this is a fundamental formula, like the Gouin formula, that we need to use. And we use this formula over and over again. Well, it's a product formula, basically. This comes from this excess sequence. Yeah. You pull back to the modular space. You take the product equal to this product. So let the telegraph of the map of the rational map. So could be looked at as this degree one here, D to Pn, the graph of the map, and this has a bigger action. There's a toy action at Pn. S one is on P one itself. So we call this group T. And so we get this map. This we call MD. MD has a projection by forgetting about the first vector. We call it pi, the map is called pi. So basically forget about the first part, but you cannot trivially do it. So the C pi is this curve if the composite is stable. Otherwise, it could happen that you map some part of it to be a pawn, then you take away this one, you take C1 union C2. So that's a map into this modular space. Okay. The reason we want to do it is because we want to compare with the linear segment model. We want to compare this space with the linear segment model, which is introduced by Ed Witten and also used by Plesser and Morrison. And so you do this to try to compare these two space. This are the space of maps, basically. So take n plus 1 tuples of degree d homogeneous polynomial in two variables. W0 and W1 corresponding to the homogeneous coordinate of P1. And we take a bunch of these degree d polynomials, and these are coefficients. Okay? These are coefficients. So this coefficients defines a space, projective space. So S1, the group T, therefore X on this space is a projective space. And S1 X on this homogeneous polynomial, W0, W1, and T X on the N plus 1 tuple. Okay? So the S1 cos T X is X in this way. It twists it around. So that's a weight. We call the weight on P1 to be alpha. And later on, the weight of T acting on Pn will be called lambda. The two variables that we are throwing around, one is alpha, one is lambda, corresponding to the multiplication. So Nd is therefore a sequence of projective space. And this will be called a linear sigma model for Pn. There will be a G equilibrium map. This or X. There will be G is always S1 cross T now. S1 cross T. This map. So we want to compare the MD that we discussed earlier. The graph, the map from rational curve to P1 cross Pn. So there's a morphism from MD to the linear sigma model. Roughly defined as in the following way. One is more detailed proof than this, but to be careful. This is similar to Jun Lee's comparison of the Donaldson invariant from the smooth side to an algebraic side. So Juni has a way to define algebraic geometrically how the Donaldson invariant behave, and this is analog of that. So you take an element in MD, so C would be a bunch of curves. And it's degree 1 on P1, so therefore there's one of them would be isomorphic to P1. You take that to be called C0. The rest is degree 0. So CIs are attached to C0 as several points. And they map to P1 to be a point only because they are degree 0. And on the other CJ, we map into PN. So the map to P1 is 0 for this J bigger than 1, bigger than equal to 1. But map to PN is non-trivial. It's degree DJ, sum of DJ equal to D. So the map here is a constant for J positive. And now, CCO also map to PN. This is written by sigma C of the sigma N. So the definition of this map mapping here to ND is going to be a bunch of polynomials as explained before, homogeneous polynomials. So sigma C up to sigma N are the given polynomial representing this guy. Then you multiply it by G. G is not a constant, so you don't factor out despite you take homogeneous polynomial. Homogeneous degree, you multiply by this polynomial, which basically representing the constant, how the constant come here. So that is a map that we use from MD to ND. They are the constants. The projection CJ into P1 give constants. The AJ, BJ are the constants representing that point. Okay? So now, so I have an equivalent map from MD to ND. So they have fixed points also. Now the weight on the other hand is different. It's now lambda plus R alpha. The lambda are the weight of T acting on the PN. T, the torus acting on PN, give you lambda. S1 X on P1 give rise to alpha. So the weight on the linear sigma model with much bigger dimension is given by this, lambda I plus R times alpha. And the way that this looks, how this looks, is important for the calculation. Okay? Because that's how the linear sigma model put together tells you. So there are that many fixed points, which we call PIR. R corresponding to weight in alpha, I corresponding to the weight on PN. So lambda I plus R alpha. So we are interested in these fixed points. So the large amount of fixed points. There are too many of them. We want to localize later. So in general, if we are taught epsilon on CN plus 1, and the equivalent model is given by this. Well, we know what a equivalent model of a point is. It's just the polynomial in the variable beta I. Beta I is now representing the weight of the action. And theta is the equivalent hyperplane class. So this will be, well, this is in general. Later on, beta I will be lambda I. Theta will be h, capital H, that we are going to use when the x on CPN. When you x on the linear sigma model, theta will be replaced by kappa. And beta I will be replaced by lambda and alpha.
Beta I has an index I in terms of 0 to n or 0 to r?
The n of them. N plus 1, I'm sorry. N plus 1 of them. N plus 1 of them. The tau is x and x and cn plus 1. So they're N plus 1 order. So in the case of CPN only, theta would be the hyperplane section. And the later on the sigma model, we use kappa to denote the theta. Okay? In the case of echelon CPN only, the weight would be lambda I. On the sigma model, we lambda I and sigma. Okay? That's the terminology we're going to use. So this first set is just acting on CPN. This is first, second set is acting on the linear sigma model. The weight are obtained by lambda I plus P plus some multiple of sigma. Right? So that's the that's going to be the terminology we're going to use. Right? And then there's a push forward map, mapping from PN to a point. So taking the class here and take the residue in theta. Okay? And if PI is a fixed point, we localize, and that's omega lambda I. So these are the terminology we're going to use from now on. There's a push forward map and there's a restriction map, restriction to the fixed point. So it's an interplay between these two maps. And this, I hope you remember this terminology. So that's basically what I said before. So the action x on the linear sigma model, the weights are given by this, lambda I plus R alpha. And we restrict on PR, that's the fixed point, is given by this. And the push forward is this, push to this point, alpha and lambda, because ND is bigger space. Now, let's look at the situation that we have, and then we can define something. MD is the map from, is a graph of the map corresponding to. There are two maps. One is project to the second factor. It's mapped to P1 cross PN. So the projection of the second factor, this is the map that compares with the linear sigma model, which I defined just in the last transparency. Okay, there are two maps. Now, here, given a vector bundle over PN, V, I pull back and get an obstruction bundle, UD on here. So given this map, this bundle, I can pull back to get a bundle over here. Right? And if I have a characteristic class, like the Euler class, I have this sitting here. And I push forward this class to ND. I push forward to here. This is my QD. And because we have those identities, Gruen formula, we can inherit the Gruen formula from here. Okay. So this is the formula that we shall need in this way. So basically, the idea from V, from this bundle, we pull back here, and then pull back to the graph, and then push forward to the linear sigma model. So what will happen is that we have a bunch of element in this equivalent cohomology for each degree d. So we would have a sequence of equivalent cohomology class, which will play the role of computing the answer and compare with the hypergeometric series. So there are several important maps in ND we have to use. One is move up from degree D minus 1 to degree D, linear sigma model, which is obtained by simply multiply F0 up to Fn by W1. And that increases the degree by 1. And the another one is the dualities, ND map to ND by flipping W1 and W0. So that gives rise to two maps on the linear sigma model. And they are equivalent. So now, if I iterate the first map d times, I get a map from N0 to ND. So the project space into the linear segment model. And the fixed point, acting on here because PI comma 0. Just map there. So now, we get very important way of comparing PN with the linear sigma model. We get the information here and localize down there later. Now, we take all those omega in the equivalent module PN. We want to make this assumption that when you restrict to the fixed point, they are not zero. And we call invertible elements. This form a semigroup. So you can localize at this set. And you define the resulting ring to be this. So basically, in this ring, you allow to invert these elements formally. And you get this ring. We fixed a omega, capital omega here. So you set about this property as you said here. And given such an element in PN, equivalent cohomology in PN, we define a bunch of elements, which we define to be omega Euler data. So omega Euler data, by our definition, is a bunch of cohomology class sitting in here. So it's an equivalent cohomology sitting here with degree going from for all D and such that you satisfy this formula. Q0 would be by definition equal to omega. So this is the definition of omega Euler data. So basically, we have a bunch of equivalent cohomology which satisfy the Gouling formula with the initial data given by omega. And we want omega to be invertible because we have to do some division later. Okay? So that's definition of omega Euler data. Now, it turns out by just playing around with the Gouling formula, you get a lot of information. And you get, this is number one is rather important actually, it's kind of like a duality to help us to go from high degree to down to there. And already if you see this one carefully, you see that some important point is paid by these points where alpha equals that. And so at alpha equal to some points, they satisfy nice identities. So this is a lemma, technical lemma, coming from the Gouling formula. Now let's apply to the geometric situation that we need to deal with. Namely, we take OL. OL later on we'll see to be n plus 1 that we're going to apply. That's the O5 that we discussed earlier, where n equal to 4. Okay? But right now, just take V to be OL. And then, of course, we have those data that we define. And we take chi D to be the equivalent Euler class of that. Okay? It's the Euler class. And, well, one is a proof, and this proof is non-trivial, actually, to prove that this is omega Euler data. So the proof format of the Euler data here, Euler class here, proofs down here, satisfy all the axioms that we put down. With omega equal to L, L is this number, times P. P is the equivalent hyperplane section. This misuse of the Etier-Bott localization formula takes about 2 pages to prove. So this is the first thing that we know. Now remember, this is the element that we want to compute. This is the number. This is the information. All the information about counting number of rational curves are buried into this linear segment model here. And so the idea is now to compare something we learned from mean symmetry, from Candela's formula. So we try to compare with this this class. There's another class in here given by PD, which we call L, is this L. Kappa is the equivalent hyperplane section in ND. This alpha, so there's a bunch of them, which we learn, one learns from the Fred, eventually has something to do with hyperbarometric series. And this is not hard to prove that this also satisfies the order data with omega equal LP. So both of them satisfy same kind of information. And of course, now that you try to claim that, you try to understand why they are the same. Eventually, they are not the same. The complication come out from the fact that we need to deal with the fact they are only the same after a Miller transformation. So you want to look at the, well, first of all, as I just said, the grouping formula is not enough to determine all the data. So you have to know some information at a fixed point. You don't need to know the information at every fixed point, otherwise they cannot be the same. So you look at the fixed points at PI0. That's a fixed point in the original PN. Well, it's a polynomial in alpha also. It's a function of alpha also. We only look at it at this point. At this point, as I said, it's special because from the grouping formula tells you when alpha equals these numbers, they are rather special, satisfy a lot of identities. And it turns out the restriction of the QD, the one that we discussed here, that we're interested in, are nice. And it's comparable with the same on for PD. So they are the same. These two information that we are trying to compare, remember, the formula we want to prove is to compare the counting to the hypergeometric series. So we try to match them all the way in both sides and see what happens. So now we get the two following information, which is very important. We get two Euler, omega Euler data, P and Q. So P and Q is a bunch of equivalent cohomology class. Satisfy the grouping formula, as I said. And here also shows that it satisfies this. The difference when you restrict to the fixed point PICO is equal to 0, as here, at alpha, only at this point. So this is the raw data that we get from observing what is supposed to be true. Basically now, it's a general theory about what we call omega Euler data. Then you can look at the space of all omega Euler data satisfy this condition. We call it linked. And the general theorem is if the degree, this is the important information, if this degree is less than that, then in fact P is equal to Q. This is a general algebraic statement about this data. It's very important. That's exactly how the Calabi-Yau condition will come in. N plus 1 comes in here. So far, we don't need that condition. L could be arbitrary, this L. But only here, the fact L less than equal N plus 1 come in. So degree less than equal N plus 1 come in here. Okay? So this implies P equal Q. So the idea roughly goes in this form thing. You try to prove this auto use localization formula. You basically look at PQ minus QD and you product with the equivalent cohomology, equivalent hyperplane succession kappa to some power. You look at it as a function of alpha and all that. And you localize this common from localization formula. It turns out LS must be equal to this. You prove the thing by induction. Induction finally ends up to be this form. And AI alpha, this coefficient looks like this. Now you see why it comes in now. This is equal, is a polynomial alpha simply because it's equal zero at alpha equal to lambda I minus lambda k divided by m. So there's no pose. The assumption that PD minus QD restriction at the fixed point, this special fixed point, PI zero, is equal zero at certain points at alpha comes out, the information comes out in this formula. We prove that there's no pole at alpha by using that. So once we know there's no pole, and we know the degree is suitably small, namely less than d minus 1 by looking at it carefully, you fox AI to about identical 0. Because LS is a polynomial in alpha. And you find out you have to divide by alpha to the power d. So the only way that you can survive the polynomial is that it's equal to zero. Okay? So that is the important fact that P and Q is determined by the Green formula and also the fixed point information at low restriction at fixed point PI zero at certain value alpha. That's all you need. Then P is equal to Q. So there's a general statement. General statement, let me remind you again, this is what we call Euler data, omega Euler data, which satisfies the Green formula. And also we need the information at the fixed point. The restriction to be the same. Now we have to put it to be used. So how do we put it to be used? Now remember, we have this ID map, which is mapping N0 to N1 and up to ND by simply multiplying each coordinate by W1. So we check up the degree. We check the degree of the linear sigma model by multiply by W1. And you map, therefore, get Pn into there. And under this map, we call X on the equivalent cohomology. So we get a map. Qd is defined on here originally. I pull it back to Pn. So now I go from equivalent cohomology and linear sigma model to equivalent cohomology and Pn. So we go back by this map, which we call I, script I. Okay. So now, once we go to script I, which comes to here now, and once we use that, I'm going to pull back the information, general information, down to here. And on here, I do a construction, which is basically come out from the formula that we know from Candela's formula. The hypergeometric C is how it comes here. So we construct this. P is an equivalent cohomology, hyperplane class of Pn. And Hg stands for hypergeometric series. This is basically hypergeometric series that comes in. So basically, it would be impossible to prove this thing without knowing the formula is correct. So there are two we can do. If PD is the one that we try to compare, which we said is the right Euler data, which can compare with the unknown, then we take Hg operating on here, we get to this information that we know, because we know the answer is correct. Namely, when you take lambda go to zero, these are the F0, F1, F2 are the base of source of the hypertrophic series. That is the part of the data we want to prove to be the answer at the very beginning, where we have this hypergeometric series, Picard-Fuchs equation, where we want to prove this equals zero. This Fi are the base of the of that equation. You come out from doing this, but letting lambda go to zero. So this is the right data. Now how does one argue? Now, so let me recall to you the way that the argument goes. Now, remember this theorem that we proved. We have everything satisfied that the length, omega, and all that. That means length means satisfied this. So both sides that we want to prove to be equal, P and Q, we want to prove P and Q are equal, basically. They are not. They are linked by Miller transformation. So they are almost equal, you see, from this theorem. The one is missing is this inequality. So what's the idea? The idea is to try to normalize the situation so that this inequality holds. This inequality holds. So what we do is that we are going to not disturb this spread. We try to move P to another one called P tilde to more canonical form, and also move Q to another form, still linked in this sense, and more canonical, so that P tilde minus Q tilde satisfy this inequality. So so let me repeat. I want to move P to some data, Q to Q tilde, and at the end, I want to make sure P tilde and Q tilde satisfy this inequality. So this is an important inequality to be achieved. And we will achieve it by a nonlinear transformation from P tilde to Q tilde. And this will be satisfied. And then P tilde will be equal to Q tilde. So will be equal to Q tilde because of this theorem. So the idea now is to squeeze everything so that this inequality holds. When this inequality holds, then we are done. And that will be the end of the proof. So that's the part that we are going to deal with now. So how do we do that? And this is encoded by this hypergeometric series. So first of all, let's go back now L equal to N plus 1. The Miller conjecture is only true for this. So we take L equal to N plus 1. And turns out, you just compute what is going on. L is this L, this number. P is the hyperplane class. F naught is the hypergeometric series that's obtained, and so is T2. So you just compute it. This is expansion in alpha minus I, expansion in this polynomial, Laurent expansion. So we expand it and get this data. Then we want to find PD tilde linked to PD. Now basically, what happens is that we have a infinite dimensional space given by the Euler data, omega Euler data. We try to operate on this infinite dimensional space by infinite dimensional group. It's a Miller transformation acting. The group of Miller transformation act on this infinite dimensional space. So make a move there. So we construct PD to BD tilde using that group. And so that it will move this expansion to this. We kill this. We make it to be more canonical, the alpha inverse part. to be F1 over F0. This, of course, comes from the fact that we know the Miller transformation comes from F1 over F0. That's how the Miller transformation comes from, F1, F0. So move to that part, and you can do it. And then, similarly, you find a Miller, Miller transformation mapping QD to QD tutor, so the hypergeometricity is equal to this. So you move it so that the expansion is good, and then you conclude that the restriction of those fixed points satisfy the assumption that we need, and you conclude P tutor equal Q tutor. That's basically what you want to do. So what happens is this. This group is, I don't have enough time to go through all the details, it's rather technical. But roughly it goes like this. The move of the the move that we do has the following information. From Q to Q tutor actually involves the Miller transformation. We move the T variable, the independent variable. Remember, capital T is F1 over F0. So that's the move you get. And the IP tutor T, actually, at the end, you move the hypergeometricity in this form with exponential F over alpha there. Where F is equal to this. This equal to this transformation. This is, you put exponential F over alpha here is to Q. That term is a power series multiplication of the other power series, so Q, the second term. That's why you put this there. You really call there. So you want to make this term to this form. You multiply by exponential factor to move it to here, to here. So the multiplication therefore has this type. This corresponding to that. The reason you multiply by exponential F over alpha is because you want to move from here to here. To move, so that's why you change this factor to here. So, you move it. But the good thing is the lambda goes here, this disappear. And therefore, this satisfies this two inequality. And so the original one from here to here, the original one, satisfies this inequality. See? From here to here. That is actually the information that we need. The left hand side is just this information as I told you earlier. It's a 1 T F pi and this. DF over DT. This is a one. This is a quantum matter that appears in the flat connection that in the original paper Candelas in the spectrogeometry. So where capital F is this is the counting function. The right hand side you need to prove, but you can prove it. It looks like this. This is the F0 if you multiply F0 out. F0, F1, F2, F3. That is the period of the holomorphic form. So you prove the period of the holomorphic form is equal to the special geometry, 1 T, F pi, and that. So that is a proof of the Miller conjecture from hypergeometry series is the right-hand side, and this is a counting function. So that gives the end of the proof. So basically, we do not see any Miller manifold appears in the proof. It's all the fixed point information that you have to put it in the right way combinatorically. So eventually, it's presumably the space of the data, the omega data, that plays a more important role. We are not sure. So, as we said, the omega, what we call omega oil data, you don't have to call this name. So basically, data element equivalent cohomology of ND, a sequence there. So that's a sequence, QD, saturated grouping formula. And we have an infinite group acting on there, and the infinite group gives rise to a Miller transformation. Each time it moves to something, it simplifies things. And there's another data which comes from the PD, which is simpler, so to speak. And you finally match them together. And as I said, for higher degree hypersurface, which is general type, this will not work exactly because the theorem that I prove, namely if the difference is less than equal to some n plus 1 times d, that theorem is not true, cannot be satisfied because that's exactly how Calabi comes here. But what it means is that it's much bigger degree you have to move, and presumably you have to move each data infinite number of times. It's not clear what that really means. Would be nice to also treat surface the general type also. So the machinery is somewhat there, the question.